Global Outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
Certain that there's community transmission because we wouldn't have caught every single case that came in from travel. And those cases would have gone on, knowing the way the virus works, to create probably two more cases and it doubling every 4 or 5 days. And so that's why I feel comfortable saying we need to act as if the virus is here, because we don't have a perfect system.
Yeah, and do your part. That's not that information, that advice was not for everybody except you. It's for all of us. So keep that in mind. Bill Carroll here. Leslie Roberts has just joined me in the studio as well. And boy, it's hard to know what to say, what to do. I was thinking just now, Leslie, as we sit here looking at each other across the internet on FaceTime, that hearing Steve's call, how worried yes. he is about his kid who's 17 and still wasn't getting it, maybe starting to sink in now, just wants to go hang out with his friends. He just doesn't see the big deal. And then when he starts to talk about how worried about he is about his brother, you know, I'm thinking maybe Monday we'll try to take even more calls. Normally we don't take calls on my show, only because at that time of day, people are busy. They're rushing off, they're dropping off the kids, they're going to work. And we try to really early on, I think maybe like the second week, and the same three people called every day, right?
Yeah.
Well, I've been retired since 1917, and I'm here to, and we love those listeners. We do, but they're, you know, it's a handful of people have the time to call. So we just didn't do it. It works better when you get on the air and people get to work and they listen at the office and they call in to their drivers and truck drivers. You know, just you can reach more people. So I'm wondering, though, if during this crisis we should take more calls.
Well, people are at home, right, working from home, and they're not going anywhere. You know, you take a look at the traffic report. Maddie has nothing to report. It's a ghost town 24/7, which is unbelievable.
Felt a little silly a couple times this morning.
Yeah.
Introducing Maddie. No offense, Maddie. But just what are we really telling? Is this information you need right now, or should we be taking the airtime to talk about something else?
Well, I love the idea of taking calls. You know, the connection that you had with both those callers and the story, not only his son, as he tries to explain it to him, his son's worried about his uncle, the caller's brother, because he's lost his job, doesn't have the internet, so he has set up a Wi-Fi system from the driveway so that the uncle can drive over to their house and sit there. I mean, those are extreme measures. But they're also caring measures, right?
But it also gave his son something to focus on, something to do, something useful, right?
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, too. We all want to be busy. And I guess that's why, as we talked about yesterday, so many people are painting their house. Something else occurred to me over the dinner table. You've shared the dinner table with my family many times over the years. And one of my kids was pulling at his braces, saying, Killian was saying, I don't know, this is tight. Well, it's the new one you just got. He's got a tooth that's coming in, and they've attached it to the rest of the teeth for the first time, and it's deliberately trying to pull it down. And I said, you know what, guys? You're going to have to take extra special
Absolutely.
Care with your teeth right now, because there's no one at the orthodontist office if you break them.
Yep.
You have to be careful. And then I thought, what if they got a toothache right now? How tough would it be? So that's my that's where I am with the family right now, and I think maybe it's a good reminder to people in general. You have to take better care of yourself, your health, dental health, overall health, now more than ever. You know, Leslie, I've been dealing with this ridiculous foot problem since last spring. You know, it's a plantar's wart. And it was, before I even noticed it, it was pretty, it's a virus too. Not like the COVID-19 virus, but they're both viral. So it's a living thing.
Stubborn,
too. And it's stubborn, hard to cure. And the cure is they put basically an acid on it and burn it. And then they scrape it off 2 weeks later and they do it again, hoping that eventually the whole thing is burned off. And I was due a treatment on Monday, and I got a call saying, we've been told by the province of Quebec, it was getting treated in Elmer because they were using a particular drug, which didn't work, but they were trying to use. And they've been told by the province of Quebec to shut down.
Yeah.
So who's going to scrape this thing off? Who's going to file it down? Who's going to treat it again so it doesn't come back? I'm going to have to live with it. It's going to be probably 2 months from now, a full-blown issue, and I'm going to be limping, and I'm going to be back to hip pain, but I'm going to have to live with that. So,
and you will
take
live.
Take care of your health.
Yeah, but you will live, and it's all emergencies, right? Right now, I know I've talked to a lot of people, for example, you know, people going in for cancer treatment, going into hospitals, and hearing that there are only 5 people in the waiting room as opposed to 50. I mean, that's the emergency cancer chemo treatment situation and
for
scenario.
Sure. Now,
mine
is,
should be.
You know, mine is a little thing, and it's not life-threatening, but it's painful, and it makes... The good news is, where is there to go anyway? I don't know. You know, I can hobble around the house. I can't really go far, so there's... It's not as big an issue, but it's just something to think about. This is not the time to relax on personal hygiene, dental hygiene. You don't want to get a toothache right now, you know, right? You just... You gotta watch yourself really carefully because we don't want to put any extra stress on the system.
You know what hit me was the widow of the 51-year-old man in Milton who passed away. Dr. Rao, who you've interviewed many times, he was actually treating him at the Milton Hospital. Just hours after he passed away, she was on being interviewed through FaceTime telling people, this could happen to you, it happened to me, my husband died just hours ago. And I'm begging you not to go out. Don't, you know, and she, at that point she said, don't go to coffee shops, only do essential things. And when you're there, you know, make sure you have the social distancing. This is a woman, Bill, who is now in isolation for 14 days. Her husband, who they found out at 10 hours after he died, that he had COVID-19. She can't even plan his funeral. 51 years old, pre-existing condition, which makes sense.
No one can come to her house to hold her.
No. 10 days or 14 days now. Until she can bury her husband. These are
at
the
least.
Stories. Yes, at least. And these are the stories that bring it all home, that we have to, you know, hear to understand how serious it is. Then there was the 95-year-old woman who was in her home, and it was her birthday yesterday, and her entire family came to the end of her driveway to sing happy birthday while she stood at the front door. These are the stories, not only to bring it all
home.
Hope
they stood far apart, though.
They did.
At the end of the driveway.
They did. But also to remember that, like your 95-year-old neighbor, Bill, call them. Maybe have a conversation from the end of the driveway. Your mother, your grandmother, whatever age. This is the kind of stuff we should be doing and make it serious right now, because Dr. Rao was telling me that the situation is they're worried about the healthcare workers in isolation coming back from March break, and it's really taking a strain on the healthcare system. So I said, well, that means in 14 days when they can go back to work, we'll see some relief. He said, by then, we may be overwhelmed. And that was kind of eye-opening for me, too, because they can't go back to work if they're in isolation because they're out of the country, right?
No, we're expecting an announcement from the premier today, and it's becoming an everyday thing, and it should be. He has the health minister with him, but interestingly, and it can't be insignificantly, the education minister is going to be with him.
I can
tell
you,
school is supposed to go back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'll be surprised if it does, but there's an education related announcement which we'll carry coming up at 12:30. What you had a chance to talk to the education minister?
We contacted back and forth because I basically said, as you would, what is the very latest? When can we talk to you? And he said, I'm swamped in COVID briefings. However, I'll have an announcement very soon. I'm assuming that means this morning on the next steps in terms of continuity of learning. So that's when we'll probably get more information. To your point,
if they were just going to extend, you know, if it's just 2 weeks after March break,
yep.
Do you really need to do that? You could extend the school year by 2 weeks. You could write that you could cancel some PD days, all school trips. You could squeeze maybe what's left into 1 week. If you're getting serious about some kind of online component, that tells me they're not expecting our kids to go back to school in 2 weeks.
No.
Listen, look what the Ottawa Medical Officer of Health said about what we're seeing now, the 16 cases as of yesterday. Do we have a new number yet today?
Nope.
It's around
10:30. Yeah, we'll get it at 10:30.
Those reflect where we were 2 weeks ago. The measures we're taking today, we won't even know if they're working for another 2 weeks. There's no way they're going to let kids go back to school in 2 weeks. I just don't see it. That's only an opinion.
Well,
but I really feel strongly that it's
Dr.
almost
said,
certain that they're not going back.
Yeah, Dr. Etchis said 3 weeks plus, right? Right there was the first hint. And we're into a week two? Oh, no, end of first week. So we got 2 weeks.
First week, March break, right?
It feels like a long
week,
but yeah.
It was a very long week.
Well,
because it was
last
Wednesday and Thursday, it started to get real.
Yeah. Well, and technically, this is week one of the new normal, right?
Yes.
Even though we've been talking about it for weeks and watching it from afar for months, the new normal kicked in this week and continues to get deeper.
Don't you think their tone does really suggest, though, that they think that people this weekend are just going to be, okay, it's fine. It's enough. There's only 16 in Ottawa. I think that's why we're hearing from Dr. Etches. No, there are 2,000 people out there who may not even look sick, who could infect you.
Presumptive cases, she's estimating. Yeah. And that doubled since, 5 days, since she said 1,000. So that's the thing, right?
And most of those people won't show enough symptoms to ever be tested. So or maybe historically we'll test people for immunity to it. Maybe a couple of months down the road we'll do more testing so that we know. Because it'd be nice to know if you've already had it. And so I read a doctor in the U.S., San Francisco, who has it right now. And he said, boy, it's manageable, but he's really sick. It's really sick. And he said, for him, the good news is in a week or so when he can go back to work, he can do it without fear because he believes, and it's not 100% proven, but usually with viruses, once you've had them, you have some immunity. He believes that he'll be immune so he can help without worrying about it, right? He can deal with more patients, that he can go. And I thought that was so brave of him. You know, the guy's in his sick bed right now and he's already thinking, well, the good news is I've had it, so I can help more people. And I think we'd all like to know a month or two from now if we were in touch, contact with it in some way, and if we've developed some immunity to it so we can relax a bit and those people can go to work while the other people stay at home. So,
and then those of us who are staying at home and going to the grocery store, I don't know if you've seen what Costco's doing, Bill, but they're actually, you know how they have the massive carts? They're putting a person, they're doing a long lineup, a person, a cart, a person, a cart. Loblaws is restricting the number of people at their busy stores are going in. That's what we have to do. Because remember, in our everyday, when we go out, it could happen at any point. So good on Loblaws, good on Costco, and let's hope other people do the same.
All right, so just, it is about you, wherever you are right now. Stay home this weekend. Chill out. Stay away from people. It's a couple of weeks of that. And I think, I feel like we are almost on top of it, but we got to double down our efforts now. That's what I'm going to do. I hope that's what you'll do. And I will talk to you on the national show, 12 till 2. We'll have that press conference from the Prime Minister and the Premier coming up.
Less than 2 hours from now. Thank you, Bill. Bill Carroll, of course, noon on the National iHeart Radio Network. All right, talk coming up. I want to keep this theme going about helping people. Sean McCann of Great Big C fame, he is doing something very special at noon. I'll tell you about that next, right here on News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Global outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
We should learn more from the Prime Minister. He has an address to the nation, as we're calling it now, every day around 11 o'clock, 11:15, we're told. And when he steps out of Rideau Cottage, we will take it live. Between now and then, we've got some great people to talk to from a human perspective. We'll have some doctors, too, but there are a lot of people helping people, giving back. Hillary McKibben. 6 years old. Remember her story? Diagnosed with a rare blood disorder. She and her mom will join us. See how she's doing. This whole social distancing and self-isolation, she's used to it. She'll say, the six-year-old will share some tips for other kids. Maybe if you have some kids at home, you can gather them around the radio and you can hear kid to kid the advice. Sean McCann, yeah, of Great Big C. He has planned something very special today and every day going forward from his home in Manitic. We know Sean's been very vocal about his own struggle with mental health. He joins us. He's, as I said, from his home in Manitic. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you all?
We're doing well, and thanks to you, we're going to even be better. You're going to perform for us in a second. But first, you've been quite open about your struggle with mental health over the years. In fact, you said that thing in your hand saved your life.
This is my best friend, Old Brown, and you know what? He's literally held me up for thousands of performances. He was the friend that was there for me. He was always there for me and helped me get through some really rough times when the time came. And he's there today. He's ready to go. He's still here. You know, I believe music is strong medicine, and I believe it can do a lot to help us get through these very strange days. You know, we have to stick together, and we have to never give up. You know, we will get through this, and music is a way we can do it together.
You've got a new book, One Good Reason, A Memoir of Addiction and Recovery, Music and Love. Times like this also triggers, right? When somebody has in recovery, it triggers the past, right?
Yeah, I think these particular challenges with the isolation, people who suffer from mental health issues and certainly addictions like myself, this is very challenging for us. And I have a great compassion for everybody who's in that boat. And we have to find things and find ways to be together. And we hope our book, One Good Reason, is written by myself and my wife, Andrea, and it's about our marriage, really, and how it survived my addiction by facing my truth. But these days, you know, we have to find new and inventive ways to stay close. And if you are out there and you're suffering from anxiety, I would advise you not to pay too much attention to social media right now.
Yeah.
It's hard and difficult to watch. But having said that, to kind of kick at the darkness from my own end, I was looking for something I could do. And every day at noon, I'm going to get on Facebook Live, which I just figured out this morning how to do, and it's not that hard. But I'm going to show up and I'm going to sing a song every day at noon and talk to some people every day at noon for 14 days, which is, I'm on day 7, but I'm going to continue for 14 days, which is what most people will have to self-isolate for. So please join me online, which is right now the place we can be.
So where do we find you? On Facebook?
I'm Sean McCann. I think my handle is actually Great Big Sean on Facebook. But not just if you go shoot Sean McCann, I'll be there live every day at noon for 14 days. It's my commitment to you and all my friends out there who want to stay together and need maybe a little compassion today.
It's kind of like your own version of a kitchen party growing up, right?
I'll probably be in the kitchen when I do it.
Yeah. It would be fitting, right?
It's always the best room.
Having spent time in Newfoundland and Labrador, I can tell you those were the best times I spent in the kitchen with the local folks.
Well, there's a serious focus on there, and that's where music kind of generates from there. But music is everywhere, and it really is something that binds us in a deeper way. For me, it's my religion now. It's what helps me get through hard times when there's really no real good answers. You can find it in music.
So let's hear you. What are you going to sing for us, Sean?
Well, like I mentioned, there's a lot of negativity in the air and not as much leadership as we would like to see. And it's leading to anxiety. And I just want to remind people that this is a beautiful world and it's full of good people. And we got to look out for each other now. We got to think about each other.
Turn up your radio.
I wrote
folks.
This song about that. The world today can be a scary place. Hard to keep your faith in the human race. We're running out of trees and we're running out of space, but we'll never run out of good people. Ask them for a shovel and they'll dig you a hole. Put the coffee on, drag you in from the cold. If you get lost, they'll show you where to go, even give you a ride, good people. Good people aren't hard to find, right around the corner at the end of the line, it's true. Good people got peace of mind. I'd like to spend some time with you. Ooh. A man ain't nothing if he ain't got a friend. Down and out without a penny to spend. The bells above will ring in the end. For good people. Good people aren't hard to find. Right around the corner at the end of the line, it's true. Good people got peace of mind. I'd like to spend some time with you. You. Rich or poor, we're born to be free. Fly around the world or sail the seven seas. But there ain't no place that I'd rather be than here right now on CTV. With all you people. Good people aren't hard to find. They're right around the corner at the end of the line. It's true and it's coming. Good people got peace of mind. And I'd like to spend some time with you at noon every day. Good people got peace of mind. I'd like to spend some time with you. You. The world today can be a scary place. It's hard to keep your faith in the human race. We're running out of trees, we're running out of space, but we'll never run out of good people. You know,
one of the good people right there from Great Big Sea, of course, Sean McCann, from his home in Manotick this morning and on Facebook every day at noon. Really fitting lyrics with what we're going through right now. Jim Cuddy, also from Blue Rodeo, doing the same thing through the NAC. I know that they're actually have a fund to help some musicians who want to help get through this, and they'll be broadcasting as well. Jim Cuddy did it yesterday. So from one of the great musicians in our community now to one of the youngest in our community, Hillary McKibben. That name rings a lot of bells, doesn't it? 6 years old, diagnosed with rare blood disorder. She and her mom joined me earlier. Her mom's name is Kelly McKibben. Here's the interview.
Hi, Hillary.
Hi.
How are you? Tell me what you've been doing.
I'm good.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Well, I'm just like calming down.
Yeah. And calming.
Yeah, we're just
what
keep,
does that mean?
Keep doing what we're doing for the last 10 months, eh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you've had practice for a while now, Hillary. So what kind of what kind of stuff are you doing that you can tell us about that we can all share?
Well, I'm kind of calming down a lot of all the stress that it games up. But I'm also feeling really good and making it through this hard journey.
And what do we do for fun on social, like when we can't play frisbee with others?
Yeah.
What do we do?
Well, we actually just play downstairs and
cook. We do a lot of cooking.
We do a lot of cooking. I've done a lot of cakes.
Oh yeah.
Past these 10 years.
Good. So you bake. What kind of cakes are you baking, Hillary?
Well, I say I baked a lemon blueberry cake, but I put the blueberries in. It was a lemon cake at start, but then we mixed the blueberries in, and then I made a cherry. I made a cherry
Sure. Cherry lava cake?
It's like a cherry cake.
We need to put together a cookbook. That's what we need to do. Because you're so good now. And have you gone to see the doctor lately, or are you staying close to home?
I'm staying close to home. I haven't gone in like...
We went last week, and we got some news, and then we go back in a month, right?
Yeah, we go back in a month.
Can you share it?
We got some pretty good answers, but we know our hemoglobin's falling a bit, dripping.
Yeah.
And so we really need to tell people to
stay in and, like, keep calm and just...
And keep donating blood.
Yeah.
We need to make sure there's some there.
Keep donating blood, right?
Please, yeah.
So Kelly, tell us more about what...
Sorry, Leslie.
That's okay. Tell us a lot more about what the doctors have sort of told you that we haven't talked for a while.
Yes.
Yeah, the doctors have told me to stay in and just stay calm, because if I get my nerves up too much, my levels will kind of drip down.
Okay.
Yeah, so being nervous and can certainly have an effect on the immune system. So we try to stay calm and have fun at home. And, you know, that's challenging in itself. Hillary's, I think, 8 months post-HEG now, so her blood is showing some good signs of recovery. Her platelets went to what number?
My platelets went to 100!
Is that celebration?
But her hemoglobin is falling, and so if we need a blood transfusion next month, which is going to be a difficult appointment, we are hoping that there are donors there, that people are still going out to donate blood. So we're in quite a predicament. We really want people to stay home for Hillary for that herd immunity to protect her.
But then we also want people to keep donating blood.
Of course.
Yeah.
I wish there was like a home where somebody could come over to your home and like where your family member can get training offline
Good
to
idea.
Give blood, Ooh. To take blood, and the family member can come over to your home and take the person's blood and then bring it all over and ship it into a mail thing,
right.
and then I can ship it over to somebody.
Pop it right into your vein. Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you never know. You're pretty smart there. Hillary, before I let you go here, but I want to, you can talk to other kids who haven't experienced social isolation, and because of what, I'm sorry if I'm Are you tired there, Hillary? Story of my life with kids. What's your message to other kids watching who haven't experienced the being at home alone?
Well, I would say just try to have fun and like play with your sister or brother or play with your mom or dad, and like try to not think about it right now and just kind of push it away and just... Until you know about it more, you just kind of not, like, look at the virus.
And the best thing you said is calm down. No no reason to get stressed. Okay. Yeah. Hillary
Let's
Kelly.
Focus on what we can handle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Focus on what you can, like, handle and what you can actually like.
Okay, we're gonna take your advice because you know what it's about. Thanks, Hillary. Thanks, Kelly.
Say thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Thank you.
Bye. Until next time.
It doesn't get more real than that, right? The words of a six-year-old girl who has a rare blood disorder saying, stay calm and just know what you know. Quite an interesting interview in terms of hearing from a child who's experienced this for months, that she has been in self-isolation for the most part, except for going to the hospital. Rare blood disorder, and again, the appeal, of course, to continue to give blood that is very much still needed. All right, coming up, Dr. Neil Rao, CTV infectious disease specialist, the man who died at a hospital in Milton. He was the doctor who was treating him. I don't know if you've heard the widow saying, literally hours after she lost her husband, going public and urging people to heed the warnings because of what she experienced with the loss of her husband. He, too, had a pre-existing medical condition, but didn't expect it to be COVID-19. Now, for the next 14 days, she's in self-isolation, unable to plan the funeral. We'll speak to the doctor, Neil Rao, also get the latest on the big picture in the country. Next, this is Ottawa at Work. I'm Leslie Roberts, News Talk 580.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Global outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
We're just getting word because it's after 10:30 of the latest when it comes to COVID-19 tally here in the country. There are 873 cases now across the country, 13 Canadian deaths, including two here in Ontario, and in terms of the number here in the province, 258. Let's find out how that what that means. Dr. Paul Romeliotis, Medical Officer of Health, Eastern Ontario Health Unit CEO, joining us. Sounds like we're having audio problems. Can you hear me, Dr. Paul?
I could hear you.
Perfect. So I'm just hearing. It looks like we're at 258. So I'm not sure how that compares to yesterday. Do you know?
No. I think we're up. I don't have the numbers, but it's up by about 20 or 30. I can tell you the day before we went up by 54, and the previous day went up by 9. So I'm not surprised that we're getting these increasing numbers. And as the Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dave Williams, my colleague, said yesterday, we will be expecting a bit of a rise because we're getting a lot of, and most of these cases are imported again, Leslie. So we're keeping an eye on, you know, returning Canadians from out of the country because I think that we will expect a bit of a rise. The good news is that I think we're sort of now very timely putting through a lot of these social distancing and other public health measures to be able to, again, quell any spread within the community. We can't guarantee that it's not in our community, but we don't have any evidence that it is, you know, rampant or anything like that. The emergency measures that the Premier proclaimed a couple of days ago are meant to allow a very sort of rapid response and have some access to some emergency funding. So at this point, it doesn't surprise me. We are gearing ourselves up for getting more cases, again, hoping to be able to contain them. And that's why it would be very, very important. The message really is for people who are returning from travel from wherever they've been, stay home. Self-isolate. If you get symptoms at that point, we can test you. And for the rest of the population, stay home, stay safe is the message as much as you can.
The other message we heard from your colleague, Dr. Etches, here in the city of Ottawa, she said there are probably 2,000 presumptive cases. That's a doubling of when she said a couple days ago, 1,000. So bottom line, act as if it's in your community.
That's exactly it. You know, those are models, kind of like theoretical models. We say, you know, for every one case, perhaps we missed a couple, and then you sort of do the mathematical model over a couple of days. Those are models, but we are behaving, and I am behaving, although I'm telling people we don't have any obvious signs that it's in our community. Let's pretend that it is, because that's the best way to quell it.
Are we getting ahead of this in the hospital sector as well?
Yes, so what we're doing in the hospitals really our main concern is to be able to have as many staff available to be able to address any ill patients that are showing up with COVID who are admitted to hospital or go to the emergency room. And so there's a concerted effort across Eastern Ontario, starting from New Scarborough all the way to East here, to ensure that hospitals now are doing the proper precautions, stopping elective surgery, stopping elective visits and so on, and appointments to be able to liberate staff. At the same time, we're also working, as Ottawa has, and we will, you know, very shortly, starting to create some testing and assessment centers that are outside of the hospital four walls, in order for us, again, to ensure that individuals who have symptoms, you know, who may very well have COVID-19, but are mild, will be able to go and get assessed, either get tested and or assessed, but avoid overloading the emergency room, so we could have, like, all hands on deck at the hospital, so all the staff can be concentrating on the people that need the urgent care.
Of course, you know, we're heard all around the valley and beyond. So what areas are you talking about opening up these assessment centers?
Oh, I'm talking about all of the areas, all the way from Scarborough to the Quebec border here. We're looking at plans of each one of us has plans to open assessment centers. Again, it varies with the landscape and how big we are. But this is they wanted to concentrate on the bigger cities first, but now we're looking at the rural areas. And so we plan for at least 5 to 6 in our area. And I want to put a caveat on that. We plan for them. They're ready to be. The trigger is going to be when our hospitals start getting overwhelmed, our emergency rooms start getting overwhelmed, and or if we see increasing local activity. So those are the two triggers, and we're keeping an eye on them. So we have identified locations. For example, in my area, we've identified 5 locations, and we will trigger them as the situation progresses. Again, rural, you know, we have 5,500 square kilometers. We just can't have one because it's just impractical.
A lot of people sick with the cold right now, worried about bigger things. When, at what point, Dr. Paul Romiliotis, do we go to the ER or the assessment center?
Well, first of all, there's a number one, to the ER, regardless of what the cause is. If you have shortness of breath, if you have difficulty breathing, those are the immediate signs that you have to go to the emergency room, call 911. If you don't have those symptoms, which again could be, the symptoms could be anywhere, fever, cough, runny nose, a bit of a body aches, but nothing more than that. At that point, you can either stay home, or if you're worried, you can actually call. There's a self-assessment website, actually, through ontario.ca/coronavirus, and it can actually do a self-assessment, and it tells you whether or not you need urgent care and so on. But the point is, if you're in the 85% at least of the people who get coronavirus, COVID-19, and don't have any respiratory difficulties or any need to go to the emergency room, then you could either stay at home, take care of yourself, self-isolate. But if you want to get assessed, then you can go to the assessment centers, but don't go to the emergency room. That's the whole point of setting up the assessment centers.
Important to reiterate that, which is why I wanted to ask you again. Dr. Paul Romiliotis, Medical Officer of Health, Eastern Ontario Health Unit CEO. Thank you, Dr. Paul. I know you're a busy man.
Thanks. Take care.
Big story happened last night on CTV News. I don't know if you saw it, but for the first time we saw a face to the deaths. A widow. 2 deaths in Ontario. One of them, a 50, early 50s man. He had a pre-existing health condition, had what was, he thought, the flu, achy, went to the hospital. Initially, they actually didn't test him. Finally, when he went back a second time when it got worse, then they realized something was going on, but he actually died before they got the results of the test. Hours later, his widow went public and said, "We need to stop this. How do you do it? Listen to me. Self-isolate if necessary. Social distancing." And that was the thing. The minute you can see that this can hit somebody, a human being, and tell someone's story, I think it makes a huge difference. The doctor who was actually attending to this patient is our own CTV infectious disease specialist, Dr. Neil Rao. I spoke to him a little earlier.
Good morning. First question. Actually, it's about you. We heard that terrible story, the 51-year-old man from Milton who died. It was your hospital, right?
Correct. Very sad. I was involved in his care as well, and I'm not in quarantine. All the right precautions were used. But it goes to show you something different. He was someone who had underlying disease. He's actually, his wife has gone public with his story yesterday night. But what's more interesting is that he had a good quality of life, and he got it. His underlying disease did predispose to the bad outcome. And what is also interesting is he didn't actually travel to anywhere except, like, say, Orillia. You know, it wasn't really a very exciting travel story. And this is why initially cases were missed. We had a system set up in our hospital where anyone who was severely ill with pneumonia was tested independent of travel history. It almost goes back to what was happening in Italy in the early days of the Italian outbreak. They did not realize they had a local outbreak. Luckily, we're on top of it now. We're testing everybody who even comes into hospital now with pneumonia. even if they haven't traveled. So, of course, the testing needs have gone through the roof, but that's how we're finding cases and protecting healthcare providers from getting it from the patients and then vice versa. Healthcare providers from bringing it in because we've also locked down the hospital.
Yeah.
In Italy, what happened is they didn't see a local outbreak. It took off in hospitals, and I think it even transferred between hospitals and healthcare workers bringing it in multiple hospitals. I think that's how it really got out of control in Italy. And the same thing happened in Iran, and probably those really big outbreaks that we hear about Iran, Wuhan, Italy, and Iran are sort of due to unrecognized outbreaks, and everyone else around them sort of clamps down, and that's why it's like Hiroshima. You get one area that's hit, big red spot on the map, and then everything around it's a little less intense.
Sounds to me like you're suggesting maybe it's time to widen the net on who we test.
We have widened the net. Are they being tested is another story. That's the big problem in this province right now. Everybody is eagerly trying to ramp up. I'm hoping by next week my own hospital will have things up and running, and I think it's going to happen. But unfortunately, we were kind of blindsided by the need for testing, and I'll kind of explain to you why.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is if you're looking at healthcare workers who come into the hospital, even the sniffles, a minor cold, can be this disease. So you can't set a threshold for testing that you have to have at least fever or fever plus cough so that you hold back from testing people. I think of it almost like a penalty box. If they walk in and they say, I've got a sore throat, they go to a penalty box and the clock starts ticking until the test comes back before they can get back on the ice. So that's my, I keep using hockey analogies, but they almost work for this disease, right? Because the puck is like the deadly thing that can go in the net and actually kill somebody every time someone scores. That's kind of what it's like, right? Now, the other problem we've got is patients who come in, if they have like a bit of shortness of breath or fever or a cough, there's a lot of reasons why they can have it. It can be anything from heart failure to a blood clot in the lung, whatever. But because we're in this midst of COVID-19, they end up getting set up for testing. And then they get isolated until the results come back negative. And you're waiting for 4 or 5 days right now to get a negative result. So you've got all of these people held in a scrow as you await their results. So unless you can turn on the testing in the hospital, at the hospital, you end up with delays getting people off isolation. And then people who are healthcare workers have to put on all of the protective gear to prevent transmission. And so it becomes a bit of a macarena. It's hard to actually take care of everybody when half the hospital ends up in isolation. And you're, so once we have the in-house testing, it's better. What did happen is a lot of people were mistaken about who really needed to be tested for a while. We were testing the worried well, people in the community. I think that has subsided, but I think people were confused. The reason people are confused is we're saying to everybody, stay home. Hey, listen, stay home. This is a really dangerous virus. Oh, but not for you.
Yeah.
So it's one of the most confusing messages for people. They think the virus is dangerous to them. Then you hear about young people sometimes coming down with it. And so they think even more so that it's scary, and therefore they should be tested if they have symptoms. So we've created a bit of a demand we can't fulfill because this is such an unusual way to react to an outbreak that is serious in hospital. But all of this being said, a very long story, we do need way more testing, but we shouldn't be assessing countries based on the number of tests they do per population as if it's some kind of quality indicator. We need to look at testing being used intelligently and getting people out of the penalty box and back on the ice once their tests come back negative. And I'm talking about the healthcare workers in the system.
Sounds like the pressure is now increasing on the healthcare system.
I don't see pressure on the healthcare system in terms of a surge, believe it or not. Everyone was dreading the surge of, you know, more and more people on breathing machines. I don't see that at all. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I don't see that yet. In fact, what's also happened is we've dialed down all of our services because so many people are off because if they have the sniffles, they go to the penalty box. We can't do anything elective. So in the response to the disease and because of this drastic use of quarantine, a whole bunch of people are now off work because they came back from a trip and they've been told to stay home for 2 weeks, a completely crazy idea that this province has instituted that made it even harder for us to staff. We now don't have people at work when we need them, and so we can't provide any elective services. My lab, for example, we had a shortage of people in the lab, so we had to think about what services we would cut back. This is where you end up painting yourself into a corner.
So in 2 weeks from now, after the self-isolation of those healthcare workers is over, is that going to start to relieve some of the pressure?
I hope so, if they get back on the ice, so to speak. But the problem is if any of them have the sniffles, I've got to be safe. I take them out of circulation. I've got to test them. I hope I can get testing running where I am. And I can see everywhere in Ontario, every hospital is trying to do it, even ones who never did PCR tests. Those are those molecular tests that are used, you know, to get the rapid result.
Yep.
Every hospital in Ontario is trying to turn on this engine because if you can't, everybody's held at bay.
Bottom
the
line.
Reason is, you saw what happened in Madrid. There was a nursing home, 19 out of 130 people killed by a healthcare worker who marched in. And we have outbreaks in nursing homes now in Ontario as well.
Bottom line, and I'm just going to repeat it, self-isolation when necessary, of course, social distancing. Dr. Neil Rao, the man in the know, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get a little deeper into care centers and COVID-19 after that number. 19 of 131 people actually died. This is a very unpredictable time to be taking care of patients in big care centers like Briere. How are they dealing with the coronavirus? Dr. Carol Weeb is joining us, VP Medical Affairs for the great institution of Briere in our city. Good morning.
Good morning.
You have to go further than most hospitals, I predict, right?
We do have a really vulnerable population, and our hospital includes long-term care. So we have had to go earlier than most with restricting visitors, with closing our outpatients, with screening everybody walking in.
Compassionate grounds exceptions, though. What does that mean?
So when we have people who are dying, imminently dying, their family is screened and allowed to come and visit.
You also expect it to actually hit the institution at some point, like it will virtually everywhere in the community.
Yeah, I don't think that's a surprise to anybody that at some point we anticipate we will see COVID here. But we're trying to delay that as long as possible.
What measures are you taking?
So the screening for people coming in, everybody, staff, physicians, everybody is screened to see if they are at higher risk of carrying and being and potentially spreading the virus, and internally, if we have any new symptoms in our patients and residents that are typical for onset of COVID, they are being tested, and we have an active incident management team which is meeting once or twice every day to make decisions in a timely fashion in order to react to this because we do know that for everybody in the region, things are changing all the time. Public health recommendations are coming out, and we want to make sure that we're in step with public health and with our partners.
I probably should have started this question, but how are your medical personnel and support staff dealing with it emotionally at this point?
The biggest thing that I see is an amazing team effort. My concern for everybody is that people are going to burn out. And so we do see some fear, but the biggest thing that I see is everybody wanting to do whatever they can do for our patients and for each other.
I know that we call them the unsung heroes. In this particular case, they are the heroes. And I keep saying every time I see one, like I do with a soldier, thank you for your service. We got to say that more than ever. Healthcare, first responders, people who are actually the ones we're going to depend on when this gets, you know, the worst that it's
completely
been.
Agree.
Yeah.
Completely
thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Dr. Carol Weeb, VP Medical Affairs at the Great Center of Briere. 10:53, a lot more still ahead. You're listening to Ottawa at Work. I'm Leslie Roberts, News Talk 580 CFRA.
This is Ottawa at Work with Leslie Roberts on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Global outbreak, the latest on COVID-19.
And this story, of course, changing by the minute. The very latest we're hearing is one of the Canadians who stayed behind in Japan. He was one of the people aboard the cruise ship where many of them, of course, came back, went into isolation at CFB Trenton. One of them, who had tested positive and was taken to a Japanese hospital, has now died. A Canadian man in a Japanese hospital has now died. This story is breaking. He was one of the cruise ship passengers. We know nothing more about him. We'll continue to chase that story and give you more details. Also, the Prime Minister, we are less than 10 minutes away from the Prime Minister updating us. We will take it live as soon as he exits Rideau Cottage and goes towards the microphone. I'm keeping my eye on that. We'll bring you the very latest from the Prime Minister. Right now, let's talk about the economy. This is big, and it gets bigger by the day, by the week, and likely by the month now. We already hear this morning, Air Canada laying off 5,000 flight attendants at the main airline in Rouge as well, and there are likely more to come. The people, the baggage, the mechanics, and so on, as they reduce the number of flights going internationally and to the United States, and also, of course, start to park their planes. I talked to Bill Morneau, the federal finance minister, about it yesterday, and he hinted at a potential bailout package, saying he's already spoken to the CEOs of not only Air Canada, but also WestJet, about possibly giving them help. And also the oil industry in this Canada. He's talked about talking to the leaders in that industry as well. Let's get a big picture here about where we're headed. Moshe Lander is an economist with Concordia University. He joins us now. Thank you for your time and expertise.
My pleasure.
Let's start with Air Canada. No real surprise there, right? The layoffs, this is just the beginning.
Yeah, the transportation sector, whether we're talking freight or passenger, air, rail, whatever, it's in big trouble. The more that we self-isolate, the more that we're quarantining ourselves and locking ourselves down and avoiding all unnecessary travel, that industry is in deep, deep trouble because obviously they can't generate any revenue. And so once you can't generate revenue, once everything is grounded, you just start laying off workers, probably temporarily, but temporarily could be anywhere from 6 weeks to 6 months to 2 years.
Is it likely a bailout package in their future?
I think there's a lot of bailout packages coming,
really?
Right? This is one of those things that, you know, when you have an economic downturn because of excess in the economy, in that case, you kind of let firms fail and you just say, you know, because you bought the Kool-Aid, you gotta drink it now. In this case, it's really nothing of their doing. There was nothing they could have done to avoid this. And so it's kind of unfortunate to say to them, you know what, you're going down because of something totally beyond your control. So I think that some form of a bailout or some sort of stimulus package to kind of hold them over is in order.
Domino effect. What are the other industries, sectors we should look for?
Tourism is coming up next, right?
You know, I park at a hotel right next to us here at CFRA, and I walked in there. First of all, there's no cars in the parking lot. I spoke to the person at reception, and she said the only people who are staying there, they're also one of the flight hotels. So in other words, all the flight crews stay there. That's the only rooms they're renting right now.
Yeah, and, you know, the entire market there is empty, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, imagine what that looks like on Canada Day, and now try and envision what that's going to look like in 3 months' time. It's going to be deserted. It's going to be some ghost town. So anybody who's in the tourism industry in this country, they make their money starting as soon as the weather gets nice. And so, you know, there's nobody traveling here. We're closing down the border. And even internally, no one could imagine at this point wanting to book a flight, stay in a hotel, and go out in public when there's nothing really open to provide them with that tourism. So they're headed for trouble next. We can talk banks. They're in trouble.
They're in trouble. How so?
Well, with the Bank of Canada cutting interest rates to record lows here, you know, all of the lending rates go down with it. And so they're being squeezed in that, you know, banks basically make money by borrowing money from depositors and lending it on to, say, businesses at a higher rate. And that's how they make their profit.
But they make billions every quarter.
Absolutely. But wait till businesses can't borrow money because they don't have operations to fund, or wait until mortgages get pushed back or delayed. And
yeah.
So once they start to see their profit margins squeezed, yeah, they're making billions now, and fine, that might be reduced to millions. But at some point, they're going to start to squeal and say, wait, well, we can't do our normal operations here because there's no economy to fund. And so that ability to borrow from one side and lend on to the other is going to be constrained.
Those banks are also the top employers in this country, are they not? I mean, they're going to start laying off too?
Well, I don't know that they're necessarily going to lay off. I mean, the starting point, of course, is that that's one industry, unlike transportation, where you can tell everybody work at home. And so there's a certain ability there where they can at least try and control their costs temporarily. But yeah, at some point, if this continues to go on, I think we're kind of fooling ourselves if we think that business is going to get back to usual in the next 6 weeks. So at some point, it is going to start to put stress on them too. Bars and restaurants, they're closed down, right? So we're already seeing layoffs there. And if the restaurants are open, it's kind of a carry and get out sort of thing. So there's a limited amount there that they're going to be able to do in terms of operations as well. And again, with the Canadian summer coming around, think about all of those patios and outdoor cafes that are going to have zero business coming their way. And, you know, a sector that I'm not sure that anybody's going to feel terribly sorry for is sports. You know, we're not seeing playoffs in the NBA and the NHL coming up in the next 6 weeks. It's just not going to happen. I think that the seasons are over. And for those billionaire owners, much as it's hard to feel sorry for them, they make their money during, you know, the last weeks of the regular season and during the postseason. And they're not going to make that money because I just can't envision somebody parading around with a Stanley Cup in, you know, August long weekend.
What about the grocer sector? I mean, we got to feed our families, right?
Yeah, and you know, one of the messages that we've been hearing, you know, as I was waiting online, one of the commercials leading in here was basically saying, don't hoard, don't worry about it. Supply chains are unaffected here. You got to give us just kind of time to naturally restock the shelves, but we got everything that you need. And I think that, you know, as long as they're taking steps to make sure that people can get in a safe way, I heard the news story about Sobeys putting in kind of the sneeze guards and those sorts of things to try and protect the employees. They're not going to necessarily make billions of dollars, but they're also going to be able to continue to perform their essential function, which is making sure that we have that capacity to get the basic groceries that we need. You know, we might find that some of those goods are just not available if agriculture starts to suffer. Maybe some of those, you know, summer goods that we like, corn on the cob and things like that, they might be disrupted because they just don't have the workers to work in the fields. But I don't think that anyone's going to be talking about starvation or mass shortages in the grocery aisle.
But here's the issue. I'll give the restaurant sector as an example. So they're pivoting now. They're now going to be delivery and pickup or takeout only. So they're going to reduce their staff. They'll continue to make their product. We'll be able to buy from them. Can you not follow that model in other sectors as well?
Yeah. You know, I think medium term, once we kind of get past the worst of the crisis and we kind of figure out either how to live with it or this thing goes away, I think we are going to start to slowly see a change in the way that business operates. The fact is that most of us are working from home to the extent that we can. And there's a realization that if you think that in a 168-hour week, if we're working full-time at our desk, at most we're talking about, what, 40 hours a week? I mean, 75% of the week, our office space is sitting idle and empty, yet our employers having to pay rent and operations facilities for that 75% empty. I think that there's a thought here that once we start to show that we are capable of working remotely and at a distance, it's going to start to change the way that we see the entire economy function. That could have huge implications on commercial real estate and transportation and things like that. So it's not going to be a ghost town going forward, but I think it's certainly going to medium term change the way that we think about how we work and interact with each other.
When we talked about tourism a few minutes ago, you said 3 months. Is that what we're looking at here before we see, I mean, best estimate on when?
Yeah, well, you know, everyone's talking about let's flatten the curve, and absolutely let's flatten the curve. And once we get onto the downside and everything's kind of all clear, great. Are we going to do, hiking and camping and racing out into being around people? Or are we going to be a little bit gun-shy because we're not quite sure if this thing is really done for or if this thing is going to come back? Imagine what happens the moment one person surfaces 3 months from now and says, you know what, I've got it again.
And
are we going to go into shutdown mode again? So even once we get the all clear, I don't know how fast everyone's going to race out into public and go rollerblading and biking and hiking. So I have a feeling that we're talking about that this summer is going to be extremely slow. And, you know, the tourism industry is going to have to offer extremely good deals to try and get people to take that risk and come out.
I have to interrupt you, Mr. Lander, only because we have the Prime Minister. Thank you for your time this morning.
You got it.
Go live to Justin Trudeau.